This is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert. And again this week, Mark Van Aken joins me in the chair with regular co-host Michael Edgley in Hong Kong on another junket, otherwise known as a scouting trip. Michael Huguenin from Goal.com will be with us shortly to have a yarn about the last month of the A-League regular season, as well as Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory's hopes in the Asian Champions League. Dean Hennessy will be in with his preview of round 24 in the A-League, and we'll wrap up the first hour with Melbourne City assistant coach Luch Tranny to preview tonight's blockbuster against the Brisbane Roar at Amy Park. The second hour we're going to open up with Mark's second edition news, and then we're going to have a chat to Edge in Hong Kong about this week's Socceroos announcement and the Optus' EPL rights deal with the SBS. And of course, Ben Sora Perez will talk to us about everything else that's going on in Europe. And Mark, we'll wrap it up with Stoppage Time together. Good to have you back in the chair, my friend.
Mate, I'm here every week. Where's Edgley?
So am I. I'm here every
week. Where's my name on the stinger?
Nigel, our producer.
Where's my name on the stinger? What's going on?
I know. I think, well, we're going to produce a new version of it next week. And and Edge, we'll have first edition news with Michael Edgley from next week onwards, perhaps. Boardroom coup?
Maybe. Is that my cue?
Yeah, take it as a cue.
Let's
brother.
Go. Optus will create a 24/7 football channel to cover next season of the EPL on Optus TV via Fetch. SBS will sublicense exclusive free-to-air coverage of one game per round for the next three seasons, reports Ad News and pretty much everyone else in the world, I might say. In addition, Optus and SBS will team up to cover the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia, the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup, and the 2017 FIFA Confederations Cup. Optus plans are similar to BT's foray into the Premier League in the UK, and where they've dedicated a football channel and have exclusive rights on a selection of games. This has got the football world, Robert, in a spin.
Yeah, it has. And on the one hand, from a professional point of view, I'm glad to hear that information's starting to come out. But as a consumer, I'm not very happy at all.
Well, what you're looking down the barrel of, Rob, as a Foxtel subscriber, I'm tipping.
Yeah. Yep.
You are looking at Foxtel for a lot of your football, including the A-League.
Yep.
beIN Sport have already grabbed the Champions League. So if you're a sucker like me, you pay another $20 a month for that. Yep. Now I've got to get my little iPhone here and transfer it over from Telstra to Optus if I want to see the EPL.
Yep.
The little old capitalist in me loves this. The consumer in me is like,
absolutely
wow,
spewing.
We've now got to subscribe to three different channels just to get our football.
So do you think SBS are the big winner in all this? It's only one game a week. But
it depends, because the problem with SBS is, if you read the fine print, they have to show every team at least once throughout the season. And there is no quality, well, from what I can see anyway, no quality control over what game goes on SBS. Hence, we could end up with what they've done with the A-League, where they've basically signed on to get not the best product on the air, which has obviously ended quite badly, where the fact SBS has tried to offload the rights to the A-League. So I don't know. And it's got to be, I'm going to say, for people that are pumping their fists going, yeah, I don't have pay TV. Yeah, that's great. This has got a lot of 1998 about it too, in terms of one game a week.
Yep.
This reminds me of going to the Charles Dickens in Melbourne as Melbourne boys to watch the one game a week on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it also throws back 20 years when you'd find the international feed on the ABC news radio service, listen to it overnight. I remember when I lived in Sydney, 2KY, the racing station, used to broadcast the premiership, as it was known then, and you'd have to find a scratchy signal somewhere or other. It's just a step back in time, unless you've got really, really deep pockets. And I'd suggest that less than 2% of the national population are going to have the kind of money that's going to be required to buy all those platforms you're talking about.
And also, I guess, from Optus, Fetch TV, which is their version of Apple TV, whatever it might be. They're going to basically put their product on there as well. But
and what if you actually just want to watch it on the TV? I mean, that's a novel idea to actually watch a game on
SBS once a week. You got to hope, if you're a Liverpool fan, you got to hope Liverpool's on that week. So Look, it's for people that like choice in football. It's not fantastic. Anyway.
We'll talk about more when Edge comes on in the
we
second
will.
Hour as
we'll
well.
We will. We'll chat at the top of the second hour. Bayern Munich scored, of course, twice in extra time to battle back from two goals down and beat Juventus 4-2 as Barcelona's dynamic attacking trio of Neymar, Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi were all on target in a 3-1 victory over Arsenal.
Didn't they step on the gas just when Arsenal dared to dream?
Well, we'll hear some audio from Arsene Wenger in a second. But Bayern and Barca both march into the Champions League last eight with respective wins. Meanwhile, Man City made history by reaching their first UEFA Champions League quarterfinals. Rob, I was surprised with this. In my little mind, with all that's gone on at Man City, I assumed they'd already won Europe in the last 3 or 4 years.
No, absolutely not. Sure, they've never gone past the 16.
Haven't been past the quarters.
Yeah.
And you reckon you're a big club, Man City.
And what about PSV?
Really?
That gut-wrenching
the pens.
Penalty shootout.
Yep, 16 penalties.
Crossbar saves the day again.
Yeah, not great for them. Anyway, what are we looking at here? So it's the first, and the other thing with Man City, Rob, it's their first ever two-legged success in Europe's top club competition. Mm. It's amazing.
Yeah, and listening to some of the UK media over the last 48 hours, there just doesn't seem to be any level of excitement. They think that it was just a standard practice. You go over there, Dynamo Kiev, not particularly a juggernaut in terms of world sport, but in terms of the efforts that City have been putting up in the past or that have put up in
probably
the past.
Probably because they're playing pathetically boring football.
Yeah.
That's why. Bring on Pep if you're a City fan. Mm-hmm. Now, Arsene Wenger is largely tipped to exit the Emirates at the end of the season, but he's standing his ground. Let's hear what he had to say pre-European Cup this week.
Mm-hmm. For us, it's just the next game, and the Champions League is for us very important. We did fight very hard to be in there. We made the miracle, basically, to come in there. So now we are in a position where we're a little bit in front of Olympiacos, you know. We have to deliver something special, and I'm convinced that for the rest of the season would be a big boost for us to have a great game tomorrow.
Is the trophyless season unacceptable from an Arsenal perspective, from your perspective?
Look, we fight, of course, to win trophies, and at the moment we are not favourites to deliver that. But no matter how big the chance we have, I think the Premiership is quite open, much more than people think it is. And in the Champions League at the moment, we have a very small chance. But let's give our best tomorrow. You never know.
Tell him he's dreaming.
Well, there was no chance, obviously, as the football world, you said they dared to dream ever so briefly. But what I find interesting is I really have this position, Rob, that Arsene Wenger has obviously been a legend at Arsenal. Mm. But the time is right for him to move on. Like, I just think it's been so long without a premiership in the EPL, obviously, without... Well, I've never won Europe, that club, which is amazing to think the third biggest club in the UK has never won the European Cup. I think it's time. It's not. There's no animosity. It's not get out of here, Arsene. It's just, you know what, mate? The time is right for us to move on, to part ways. Yeah. You go this way, we go that way.
Yeah, well, you and I agree on that. If we had Edge in the studio, he'd take a different point of view. But I agree with you 100%. It's time. It's a dynamic world, the world of international sport. And unless you're performing and you're achieving at the highest level, you've got to make way for somebody who can take the next step.
Correct. Now, of course, on to Asian Champions League football during the week. A disciplined Sydney FC have enjoyed one of their greatest nights in Asian Champions League history, scoring a 1-0 win away over South Korean side Pohang Steelers. On Wednesday, Chris Namoff struck the ball sweetly from the right edge of the six-yard area in the 42nd minute, sweeping home a pass from a George Blackwood.
As Arnie wipes the sweat from his brow.
Well, he was looking quite calm on the touchline.
He was looking quite calm, but for a bloke who's going as poorly as he is in the domestic league,
we're going to chat. We're going to chat, Rob. We're playing footsies now. We're going to chat to from goal.com, Michael Hugan.
Yeah,
that wasn't a sentence in English, I'm sure, but Michael Hugan, because I'm flabbergasted at why Melbourne Victory and Sydney FC, who are both just honking in the actual A-League, are doing so well so far in Europe. And part of the answer is because Asia is only starting for most part their seasons. But It's really interesting. Now, of course, there's plenty of travel, Rob, in the Asian Champions League. But one team not complaining about travel is Kenny Lowe, whose Perth Glory have only had a five-day break ahead of this week's distance derby, inverted commas, away to Wellington. Let's hear from Kenny.
We're not allowed more time. You know, I'd love more points. I'd love to be top of the league. I'd love to manage Man United, but it's not going to happen, you know. It doesn't matter what you love. You've got a realistic situation in front of you, and you've got to deal with that. That's it.
I like Kenny. He
tells it like it is,
yeah,
Rob.
Yeah, he's a never say die kind of guy, isn't he? Even at the beginning of the season, when they were going as poorly as they were, he just seemed to be confident. He had a sense of excitement about him on the sideline, and inevitably, it's turned around for them.
There is a quote on one of the, if you're a person of a certain age in Australia who grew up with basketball, the other round ball code in Australia, Michael Jordan spoke. There's a question. Where are you happy to be going home to Game 7? Basketball people understand what I'm saying. He said, are you happy to be going home for Game 7? And he said, do we have a choice? We don't have a choice. So in other words, we will play anyone, anywhere, at any time that we're scheduled to. And that's what Kenny's saying. I like it.
Good stuff. Good stuff to you too as well, Marco. Next up, Michael Huguenin from Goal.com talking A-League and the ACL.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back. This is Box to Box. You're with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken, and it's great to have Michael Huguenin from Goal.com on the show again for a chat about the final month of the A-League and just what chance either Victory or Sydney FC are of revisiting the Wanderers ACL heroics. Good to have you back on the show, mate.
Thank you very much, gents. Great to be here.
So, mate, just four rounds to go in the A-League. There's a massive game on tonight, Melbourne City and Brisbane. How do you see that one playing out? I think it's going to be a grand final preview, personally.
Grand final preview. Interesting call. Look, I think this weekend's going to be fascinating because we have, of course, the top four playing each other. And especially in terms of the Premier's plate, these two games, we could eventually look back in a month's time and essentially say this was where it was won or lost. In particular, I think that if Brisbane win tonight against Melbourne City, they could be very hard to catch over the course of the final month. And similarly, depending on how the results play out, but if Wanderers get a couple of points ahead by the end of this weekend, they could be very hard to catch. So it's going to be very exciting, one of the closest Premier's plates or perhaps the broadest Premier's plate races that we've had in the history of the A-League. And I, for one, cannot wait to see how it pans out.
Mike, I'll put you on the spot. I spoke to Adam Peacock earlier this week, and he was really loath to try and answer this question. But your beat is Australian football amongst the world, of course, with Goal.com. In your mind, now you like me, were a bit stunned by Rob saying it's going to be City and Brisbane in the grand final. Who are your grand finalists at this point, and who's going to win? Because I reckon the one knock on City and perhaps Brisbane is the consistency.
Yeah, look, they've both. That's probably the question that hangs over them over the final couple of weeks. Brisbane are probably starting to, I mean, it's funny to say starting to show it over the past couple of weeks, but they have beaten the Wanderers and then absolutely embarrassed Melbourne Victory last week. So another big win, and that's three essential rivals that they've beaten in the space of 3 weeks. They're looking very good if that's the case. I think it's very hard to go against Wanderers making the grand final, and the simple reason for that is that they have a relatively easy run-in compared to the rest of the top four. They, of course, play Adelaide at home, although they have a fantastic record against the Reds this weekend. Then they come down to Melbourne and they play Victory, who are in bad form. Then they host the Mariners, who are terrible, and then they travel to the Knicks, which is not an easy game, but relatively speaking, one of the easier games that they could have. I think it's very difficult to go against the Wanderers making the grand final, and I'm more and more being convinced by Brisbane. So I guess if you had to put a gun to my head, I'd say that they're probably going to make the grand final. If it gets to that point, I really like Brisbane's firepower, and I just wonder whether that might go their way. But look, the top four, it's very hard to see, and I still don't think that we've seen any team genuinely put their hand up and say, we are championship favourites yet.
Yeah, I guess that's the point of this conversation then, isn't it? It's just opinions that we all are paid to toss up, and nobody can definitively or confidently say that they've got a reason for putting their fist onto the table and demanding that their opinion is right. This is NTS News Talk Sport. You're listening to Box, and we're with Michael Huguenin from Goal.com. And one of the things I'm looking forward to about tonight's match is a little bit of added spice. John Aloisi's first match at his old stomping ground after he slapped down John Van Skip with his anti-football comments. I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of extra venom on the sideline between the two gaffers.
That's possible. If there was two coaches, though, who would be able to keep control of themselves on the sidelines in the A-League, it's probably these two.
But Johnny's been firing up lately, mate. He has been...
He has. John Eller, yes, he has. But John Van Skip is one of the genuine nice guys of the A-League and very rarely gets too hissy on the sidelines. So I wouldn't be expecting too much of a sort of Kevin Muscat, John Cosmina type action going on. Look, I think it is a fascinating contest. It's probably, and look, I don't like being overly negative when we don't need to, but if there's anything that's been bad about this season in terms of the on-field play, it's simply that of all the contenders, I'm not convinced by any of them. I still don't truly believe in them, as opposed to, for example, Melbourne Victory last season, even though they only won the premiership on the final day, and, you know, there was a lot of close games, they felt like a genuinely championship team. None of the others, or none of those top four at this point, in my opinion, genuinely prove that. And partly that comes down to that three of them, the Wanderers, Brisbane Roar and Melbourne City, are pretty poor at defending. And Adelaide United, I'm just not sure if they've got the firepower to score the goals that are required, you know, in a semi-final or a grand final. So they're unbalanced teams in general. And what we're used to or what we expect from a championship winning team is that they can do it everywhere, all over the pitch. I'm kind of hoping that over the last month of the regular season, plus the finals, that a team kind of retrospectively says to us, well, we were the team. We were ready and we made it happen.
Michael, in Australia, we understand finals. We're one of the few leagues in the world that has a final system. So we understand it from the AFL. We understand it from the NRL, from the NBL, whatever it might be. One thing, and you've already touched on Adelaide there, so that's fine. It's asked and answered. But I've just got a feeling. I agree with you. I reckon the Wanderers are going to be in there. But I reckon the other team playing them, if you put a form ladder over the A-League right now, Perth and Adelaide would be 1 and 2 or vice versa. I just reckon one of those two teams, and probably Perth, will get there. I mean, do you share that? I mean, Perth were I've got to say, they did a lot of business back in January, but Perth Glory, and Adam Tackett's not even playing, but they've brought in Shane Lowry, they've brought in Andy Keogh. They're a team going places, and I would not be at all surprised if we see some purple on grand final day.
There's plenty of reasons to like them. Their final four games are against Wellington, Newcastle, which are away games. They also visit Sydney on the final day, and they, in the second last round, they host Melbourne City. So they have a pretty easy run-in.
9 points, Michael. There's 9 points right there, I reckon.
Yep. So look, I wouldn't be surprised if Perth finished something like third. I just don't know whether they can catch one or two. But again, and you've kind of touched on it, and I'm talking about it, there's so many teams in this competition this season who can score goals and score a lot of them and score them very quickly. And Perth is one of them, and hence they're incredibly dangerous when we come to the finals, because if Andy Keogh or Diego Castro have a day out, who's going to stop them? It's the same with Melbourne City. They've actually got a fairly tough run home, but who would want to come up against Bruno Fornaroli, Aaron Moy, and Harry Navio in a semi-final?
That's the point
it
you made.
It wouldn't matter who they were playing against. That if one of those guys has a day out, they'll score three goals and they'll be in the grand final. So it's incredibly difficult to predict. I think Perth are in a fantastic position. I guess the only thing is if they do slip up in their final four games, they're going to have a couple more rungs to climb to make that grand final and, I guess, to win it. But I think that Kenny Lowe, if he can keep together the majority of the squad that he has assembled next season.
A one-word prediction on Melbourne or Sydney, who's going to go further in the ACL Championship?
One-word answer.
That's it.
Sydney.
Beautiful. Ooh. Okay, Michael Hugenham from Goal.com. Great to have you on the show. We'll talk more ACL with you next time.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You are with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken because Michael Edgley's in Hong Kong. 3 out of the last 4 weeks he's been on a junket, and the board of Box to Box is going to meet to discuss his future with the team. Now, with his analysis of round 24 of the A-League, the former Notts County man and 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, Dean Hennessy, chock full of his INC supplements, which are have all informed wider consent. Available at Chemist Warehouse. You've been buying them again, haven't you, Dino?
Absolutely.
You're just looking fit, mate. You're looking
feeling
fit.
Fit as a fiddle.
Fit as a trout.
Wearing the T-shirt, trying to get there, you know.
That's me, Rob.
Yeah, now you're the rippling ball of muscle. He's as fit as a trout. But one thing that you did observe in the commercial break there was that Dean loves to come in with some of his sports memorabilia kit. Now, the other week he was wearing in his Melchester Rovers T-shirt, which for the Roy of the Rovers aficionados will be familiar with it. As Roy's team, of course, Dino.
Of course.
And that was your touring squad with your mates?
We did, yeah. We with that same team that go away. Mm-hmm. We were invited to play Robbie Williams' band when they were back in...
Which is the segue to the shirt you're wearing
correct.
Tonight.
So this is the Robbie Williams shirt that they gave us, mm-hmm. and it was a great day. We just pipped them at the post, but it was a great experience.
Hang on. You're meant to lose to people like Robbie Williams, so he tips you tens of thousands of dollars.
No, not anymore. He's kind of
a has-been. We did try.
Did Robbie play?
No, Robbie didn't. It's all his band members. He was just obviously ready for his concert.
Back in my day, we do want to get to the A-League eventually, but at FFV about 10 years ago when he was kind of top of the pops, they had a game then at the old Olympic Park, and I was there as the official photographer.
Look, I think
that... And they had someone on top of Hisense Arena taking photos, paparazzi kind of type photos. But he did play, but I think the first half, then he went and had a...
Look, the word is he's quite a good footballer, and he loves his football, supports Port Vale, which is the poor relation to Stoke City.
Yes.
But... What it's they reckon it's like he'll hit and miss. It depends if I think he was actually carrying an
depends
injury.
On how many drugs he's had the night before.
No, we wouldn't say that on this show. We'll move to the A League.
Yes,
moving right along, ladies and gentlemen. Now tonight's game is the blockbuster. That's the feature match, isn't it? So City v Brisbane Roar. We've got Luch training on after the break, and you're going to stick around because you do have a history with Luch, the assistant coach of Melbourne City, who's going to join us.
No, Luch is a good boy. I get on very well with Luch, but we
stick
did
around,
have a little
ladies
moment.
And gentlemen, you'll find out a little bit more about that later on. So we're going to talk about City v Brisbane, but let's tick through the other games, and we're going to get started with the Saturday double header. First up at Blue Tongue Stadium, the Central Coast Mariners v Sydney. Sydney's season is in a tailspin in the A-League, but they're going from strength to strength in the Champions League. Go figure.
Absolutely amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's a fabulous win during the week. And, you know, credit to them. They've been really good in the Champions League. They're form in the A-League obviously starting to waver, and you know we'll touch on victory later, but they're having some moments in the A-League as well, and you know, it's that factor of you know doing it on two different major events. But you can't really look. I'm looking at Central Coast last week, 7 yellows, 2 reds. I mean,
including Luis Garcia, the great man.
I mean, just so poor. I mean, and I can't. I mean, look, Sydney are limping at the moment in the league, but I can't see them getting anything but a result against Central Coast.
Yeah,
and if they don't, then playoffs will be a real issue.
And I've heard from several sources across various sections of the media and private conversations with different people that I've talked to about it that the way Central Coast are going right now gives you pause to think that this should fast track promotion and relegation. You can't have a team with nothing to play for, can you?
No, look, I think the B League's obviously something. I mean, I'm seeing it all on the social media. It's being talked about, and there's a lot of clubs out there at the scale, we'll call it the NPL level or ex National League teams, I guess, that have got ambitions. And I think, look, one day it will happen. Are we ready for it right yet? I'm not sure, but eventually, I think, you know, and part of being in Asia when we moved over, it was all part of that's what it had to look like, and we've done quite a good pseudo for many, many years. Yeah. But I think now it's time to say, let's plan it, give it a particular year, and that's when we all gear up.
Well, we're a decade in. It's about time something got set in stone. Because that's, as we all know, is part of the excitement of the promotion and relegation system internationally right now, and we just don't have it. So Sydney to beat Central Coast comfortably,
definitely.
One of the other massive matches. This must have been a real flip of the coin for you, Dino. The Western Sydney Wanderers v Adelaide United at Parramatta Stadium. So United unexpectedly lost to City last week, broke the 14-game unbeaten streak, and the Wanderers had to work hard at the Hutter Stadium to beat Newcastle.
Yeah, look, they did make it hard. I mean, it was Newcastle put up a really good effort last week, and obviously Adelaide, you know, well in the game. When we do the highlight, we'll talk about the statistics of actually being in possession. Mm. And it's amazing that the two big events last week, the team that won had less possession. Mm. So again, I've got a little theory on, I think, where teams are going with that. Mm. Western Wanderers, Adelaide, this is a really, really important game. Obviously, 2 points separate them. But it's getting now to the pointy end, you know, four rounds to go. Every 3 points or even 1 point is very, very valuable. I've already marked in that the top four, which is Brisbane, Western Sydney Wanderers, Adelaide and Melbourne City, are in the playoffs already. Mm-hmm. Perth most probably will. Victory most probably will. Sydney is going to be the one fighting
it
out.
They're done.
Well, you don't know. Football's a funny thing. But Newcastle, I mean, Newcastle and Wellington and Central Coast, are obviously, they're not going to get in feature. So, look, I think this is a real six-pointer. If Western Sydney Wanderers win this, they'll then push on to 5 points ahead of Adelaide, and that'll be enough cushion, I think, just to get them in the top two spot. Anything else, and then it just keeps going down to the wire. So I think with Western Sydney Wanderers at home and Adelaide, you know, obviously licking their wounds, I'm going to go a draw. I think it's going to be a tight affair, and I think everything will be quite even up there.
This is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken. We're talking to Dean Hennessy with his preview of round 24 of the Hyundai A-League. On Sunday, the doubleheader there, Wellington Phoenix versus Perth. Wellington, you don't know what to expect with them. They're ordinary one day, and they can come up and put a decent game together the next. So up against Perth at home, I think this could be an interesting one to watch, but Perth will be desperate.
Look, Wellington were really good last week. I mean, I saw that little spell where the three goals and Sydney just had no answer. Mm. But again, it's a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde with our Wellington. You know, we talked about even on last week's show about the ability that they can go and win at places, which they have. But Perth, look, for me, are still in great form. And I still think Perth are going to feature really heavily into the final. So I think as much as Wellington at home, I think Perth will go over there and win.
And on Sunday afternoon at Amy Park, with the sounds of the Formula One engine screaming in the background, Victory will take on the Newcastle Jets. They need to win that one too.
This is massive for Victory. I mean, obviously the Asian competition, they've been doing well. They most probably should have won during the week. You know, just couldn't break their defence down. This is something that's really got to now ignite them into the playoffs. And, you know, I heard Muskie interview during the week, and he's still pretty confident that they can still do it all right on both fronts. Now, obviously, as a manager, you have to be the positive spin, especially when there's the amount of games left that there are. If they don't get 3 points in this one, then this will be one that's got away. And then with three rounds to go, all of a sudden the pressure really does come out.
Dino, in my humble opinion, Sydney are cooked. I reckon the Victory are cooked too in the A-League. Discuss.
Well,
I reckon they've just had so many mountains to climb this season. It's not necessarily Muskie's fault. The foreigners are starting to go pear-shaped. Barbarossa is on the way out. Guy is not happy about the Asian Champions League stuff. Ben Kalfalar is a shadow of his former self. You've obviously had Mark Milligan leave it in the off-season. You've had Carl Valeri, the skipper, with his unfortunate problems. There have been a mountain of problems that Muskie is not responsible for, but, mate, that they are not a championship team.
Look, I think with Victory, it's always hard when you've won the championship the year before, you know, and you've gone and won it, and he always maintained that he wanted to fight it on four fronts, which he has. You know, they won the FFA Cup, which was at the beginning. I mean, obviously, we featured in that, and which was really exciting. Obviously, then they've really wanted to go in the A-League and going back to back it, which we all know is it's difficult, it's hard.
That's,
you know,
not easy.
And then obviously then with the Asian competition and the travel and what comes with it, and all the factors that you've just pointed out, there's a lot going on there. And I think if he does get something out of this season by either going to the final of the Champions League and or winning it, or even getting to the final or going really deep into it, I think you'll find that it's been a measure of how he's grown as a manager and got experience. Because last year he really managed well. And it's like anything, he's not been in the game that long as a manager and he's still learning his trade. And but I think, from a positive point of view, I think if they win this, this will give them a really, really big opportunity then to move on and push deeper into the finals.
Well, they did the treble earlier in the season. If they can do something about their A-League final situation, at least put together a tune and get something out of that, at least be competitive and then do something good in the A-League, that'd be great. Now, talk to us about tonight's game. It is massive. It's going to be, to me, one of the games of the season. Jamie McLaren v Bruno Fornaroli.
It is.
This is the sort of billboard stuff that you want to see in the A-League, isn't it?
Well, this is, you've got Fornaroli as your import, and then you've got the Jamie McLaren, a young Australian, you know, in the international setup, obviously being dropped for this particular series with Ange, but I think there's...
Looking after his old side.
Yeah, and I think his mitigating circumstances, that I think he wants to just look at as many options as he can. I think he already knows where Jamie stands. And I think it's in a positive light. Fornaroli's been an absolute breath of fresh air, and I think to see the two best marksmen in the league this year, I think it's really important that the service to both of those is going to be vital. Interesting stats just on building up from the games last week. Brisbane 45%, Melbourne Victory 55% possession, but they get beat 5-0. Adelaide 59%, Melbourne City 41%, and they win 1-0. So I think, especially in the modern day, there's a lot of teams now with a theory on going on the counter-attacking. And I think when we look back at the show 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about Melbourne City and the problem where they were conceding goals regularly.
Yep.
And if they could fix that, then we always knew that the top goal scorers in the league, they're not having any problems down that end. Here we go, 2 clean sheets in a row, 2 really big wins. They're right bang in the middle now of really trying to get a top 2 spot. And hopefully, from City's point of view, they've actually fixed that problem, and they're getting a bit more consistency. So I think if they do that, and with all the quality of the Moyes and the Novillos and the former Rollers, and I think, obviously, even with the addition of the new goal scorer last week, that was great for him, coming in and making his mark. So he all of a sudden, you know, Fitzgerald becomes a little factor where he can be.
It makes the opposition think.
Absolutely. So it's a fourth one that they've got to deal with. On the flip side of that, I think, from Brisbane's point of view, it's going to be important that they do deal with their threats going forward, especially in that final third and their defensive third. The key to that, again, will be McLaren, because it's where he stretches it with the pace. And if you look at some of the goals they scored against Victory last week, they're on the break, where Victory are in deep into their half, the counter-attack, and they finish. I think this will be a great game of chess. It's going to be really hard to pick, and I'm going to sit on the fence this week. I know I changed my mind, even though through the notes and you all picked up that last week. But I actually think this will be 2-2, and it will be a draw.
A 2-2 draw.
I think so.
Well, if it is a 2-2 draw, it will be an exciting game. Hopefully that will be an indication of just what we're about to see tonight. I'm predicting this as a grand final preview, with apologies to the Western Sydney Wanderers. If it is a grand final preview, it could go down as one of the crackers. And if tonight is an example of that, then bring it on.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'll be glued to the TV when, obviously, I'm not at the game, but hopefully we have a fabulous game.
You're not going to go anywhere now, because Luch Trenny from the Melbourne City Football Club is the coach. Yeah, we want to go through the entrails of the history of these two men on the pitch and really uncover some old wounds and we want to bring it to you on Box to Box. So Luch Trenny from Melbourne City next after the break.
Box to Box.
Can you believe?
The Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken, and you're listening to us either on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you may have well found us on TuneIn Radio as well. Tonight's 1v4 match at Amy Park is a massive game for the home side, Melbourne City, against a Brisbane Roar mob who've rediscovered their mojo. A win for the Roar will keep them on top, but if City get full points, they'll jump to the top of the ladder themselves, at least until tomorrow on goal difference. So to go into the heart of the home camp, welcome for the first time on Box to Box, Luch Trenny.
Yes, good evening.
thank you for joining us, Luch. Assistant coach to John Van Skip at Melbourne City, a man who is well and truly used to working at the sharp end of A-League finals when you're with the Brisbane Roar going all the way with Mike Mulvey. How do you feel the vibe in the camp at Melbourne City? Is it something similar? You're sensing something building, Luch?
Definitely. It's been a few weeks now that the confidence and the growth within the team has started to come within the results and the performances, and it's always the unknown when we talk about finals, because it's on the day that teams either tighten up or they actually excel. So we're hoping that it will go our way with the performances of the last couple of weeks.
And Luch, before we sink our teeth too deeply into this one, we've got one of your old sparring partners in the studio, our A-League analyst, Dean Hennessy. Dean?
Hi, Luch.
Hi, Dean. Good to talk to you.
Likewise.
So you guys forgiven each other after
I was telling the boys off air, Luch, that we had that little moment back in the days when we played in the 90s when Thomastown Albion Rovers.
That's right.
And a little incident where you're trying to score and I'm trying to clear it off the line, and I come off second best anyway.
Broken leg style. And Luch, to his credit, he cleared you of any fault whatsoever. He said you were just going in to score and inadvertently he came up with a broken leg. So you're in the clear, Luch. You're no muskie.
These are the good old days that we can talk about, but we'll probably just leave that to the past and let's move on to the future, I suppose.
Actually, Luch, if I'm going to blame someone, it's Robbie Bryan, because he should have saved it and tipped it around the post but put it back into your path. So didn't really help me. But hey, listen, from my point of view, I mean, obviously I've followed your career, obviously, because we played against each other, you know, for many, many years. And it's been interesting. Like, I went on a coaching journey, and obviously you have. I've been really, really impressed, you know, in the strides that you've taken, wherever you've gone, you've done well. What is it that you think, and supposedly, especially now with City, which is a big organisation, what type of role do you play at the club? What's your main responsibilities?
Well, it's one of those ones where you sort of get asked a lot of questions, and more around, you know, areas of the technical, tactical, from youth coaches to John Van Skip to John Didalitza, who's in charge of football department. And again, these are the questions that you sort of at times get asked because of the time that you spend in the game. And for me, I'm happy to advise and help and provide the assistance and support through all the staff that we have at Melbourne City. So it's sometimes history doesn't repeat itself.
Yeah, of course.
On every occasion, but at some instances we tend to see the things that we saw in the past and are happy to pass that advice on.
Have you found it different to say, let's say, your role when you were at Brisbane? Is it different fundamentally in the day-to-day stuff? I mean, especially with, I suppose we all have this perception from the outside looking in that you're part of this massive organisation worldwide, and maybe some of their procedures and requirements that they need, you know, to run their businesses in it all over the world, maybe more demanding on like your role and what you have to do compared to, say, just working for one particular franchise in Brisbane.
Yeah, so let's just look at the staff in particular and the number of support members that we have around the first team. So if I was to think about the time I had at Brisbane Roar, there would be myself and Mike Mulvey,
yeah,
and a physio. And we had one conditioning coach, one goalkeeper coach. That's it.
Yeah.
We're talking about a global, let's say, city football group who have a model coming from Manchester City that have full-time analysts, that has a support science department, a medical department, which consists of six physios. We're talking analysts that are hovering around three or four per team. And so if you look at an analyst for myself at Melbourne City, we have two full-time analysts, one in the seniors and one in the youth. And obviously it's a little bit of a carryover in the women's league. That wouldn't have happened at Brisbane. That would be the coach who would have to do the session, design the session, put the session on, deliver the session, go off quickly, go do the analysis, go cut it all up, present it, do it all that, and then, right, don't forget, you've got to do the opposition analysis later in the week. So you would spend close to 40, 50 hours just head down doing the raw hours of just cutting games up, let alone just devising a session so that we can actually execute the following day. So we talk about our staff, and we've got two physiotherapists, we've got a human performance, we've got about 10 staff members on the field at any given time for a training session. That is
massive,
way beyond any of the A-League clubs that I used to be working with.
Yeah.
So it has changed. It's changed, obviously, because we're evolving with the times, and the support within the City Football Group will only tend to ask more of each of the members within the City Football Group. So for argument's sake, if we were to share areas of topics and projects that we're constantly in discussion on a monthly basis, we've got all the four clubs with coaches who have got a variety of experience in coaching at all different levels, all putting in their advice and ideas that so that the next possible opportunities are going to be there for everyone to take on board and utilise, which is a massive advantage.
You're with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, talking to Luch Trani, assistant coach at Melbourne City. Luch, we've seen the Melbourne City team over the last month try a few different formations, a flat four in the midfield last week, a diamond the week before. Is this still a reflection that you did a lot of business? Probably Perth Glory outpipped you in terms of the A-League, in terms of transactions in January, but Melbourne City definitely in the second position with that. Is that more a reflection that yourself and JVS and the crew are still really trying to work out what is the best football, or is that just trying to keep the other teams on their toes?
Bit of both. In the sense that we've got a group of players that have the ability to tweak and adjust within the game, and that's probably the advantage from that point of view, that they're able to adjust accordingly. I think with the group, they're developing week by week with the strengths and the understanding with the new inclusions that we had through the window, January window. And the more time they spend within the group, they become more astute, more wiser. And the resources that we have, we're able to turn a lot of the development within the team and in the week far quicker than we used to. So that means that we can analyse our performances and then make those subtle adjustments based on our own performances, but also anything that we see that might make that a little bit more of an advantage to us against any opposition and might give them the some difficult situations during the course of the match.
And, Luch, that sort of dovetails pretty neatly into my next question, because I wanted to ask you about that controversial statement that John Aloisi made after the last game, which was raised in a press conference with your senior coach during the week about anti-football, and not that that anyone in this room necessarily subscribes to that comment, but it was a pretty sharp comment from John Aloisi last time round, and what you've just described gives us a sense that that you're far from a club or a team that that's looking to play boring, dull defensive style football, that you've got multiple game plans for multiple scenarios.
Absolutely, and we can't be at any stage think that we're a team or a club or a game that's going to rely heavily on one formation, one variation of pattern play within each structure. You'd be very naive to think that there's only one way of playing the game. And there's many games around the world that have different systems that all work well, and you've just got to find the right mix that fits your team, that you're playing with or working with.
Luch, the time's gone too quick. It's been a fascinating conversation with you. We hope to have you back on again. We wish you all the best for tonight and for a strong run into the finals for Melbourne City. Not that our Brisbane listeners would concur with that necessarily, but good luck, mate.
Good to talk to you as well, Luch.
Thanks, Luch.
Take care.
It's a pleasure.
That's Luch Trenny from Melbourne City Assistant Coach on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken, and we've got to give a huge thanks to our great mate Mario Tasconi at Chemist Warehouse, because if it wasn't for Mario backing this vision of Box to Box, it would have never got off the ground. And who could believe that 19 weeks on, we've had a myriad of guests from all over the world giving us the opportunity to talk about the world game. Thank you very much, Mario. Thanks to all our mates at Chemist Warehouse. Now, shortly, we're going to get into second edition football news with Mark Van Aken before we get Box to Box's very own Michael Edgley on the line from Hong Kong to talk Socceroos and EPL. And as always, Benny Soro Perez is back in the studio for his weekly European roundup before we wrap it up with stoppage time. Marco, fire away.
Football Federation Australia is hoping to finalise the sale of the Newcastle Jets by the end of the year after incurring millions of dollars in losses from running the club since assuming the ownership from Nathan Tinkler in May, reports Fairfax's Dominic Bossi. The news of six potential buyers having shown interest is welcome relief for the governing body, which is set to announce a $2.4 million loss from the Jets operation this season after a proposed sale to Dundee United chairman Stephen Thompson collapsed late last year. Significant legacy debt associated with the club, compounded by the FFA's hefty losses in the first year, has made this a bit of a minefield. These could reach more than $4 million by the end of the season if the governing body is unable to sell the club within the stated time frame. It is understood FFA was forced to honour existing debt associated with the club, including outstanding superannuation owed to players, unpaid stadium costs and loan fees owed to foreign clubs. Having cleared these outstanding debts, the forecast loss for the season will be trimmed to approximately $1.8 million. This is my question, Rob. FFA have got UBS trying to shop this club around. They're trying to get $5 or $6, $7 million for the club. I'm reading here that once you buy this club, you're going to lose $4 million. Should we not just find a good owner who's willing to put the millions of dollars in philanthropically to run this club moving forward? And I know that's a tough task, and just sell the club for a dollar. Well, I bang on about this a lot, but you're basically asking someone to give you $6 million for a license to lose $5 million.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And so why would anybody do it? Why would any businesswoman in their right mind?
Unless they love the Newcastle area.
Yeah.
Which we thought Nathan Tinkler did, but obviously Nathan's had his own problems with the end of the resources boom, which has hit the Australian economy. Anyway, let's get this sorted out. So the FFA, FFA this season have not had any marketing behind the A-League, which is really giving chairman of the other clubs in the league the irrits. There's been no We Are Football. There's been no ads on TV like we have in the AFL.
Oh, there's been plenty of marketing. It's all been free and it's all been bad mid-season. Thank God that's over, though.
What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. Don't forget the Socceroos. The Socceroos are in action on the road to Russia next week when they take on Tajikistan in Adelaide. We ran through Ange Postecoglou's squad last week, of course. Let's have a listen to what the gaffer had to say about some of the inclusions this week on Fox Sports.
Tell us about Gianni, Ange. Interesting.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I mean, it's one of those where when you're an international manager, you don't think you're going to be in the wheeling and dealing of trying to get players from other countries. But I've known Apple since he was 16. I coached him in the Joeys when I was coaching. He was one of the first players I asked about when I got the job, actually, because I thought, I knew he was doing well in Greece. I knew he'd played for us. And at the time, it was pretty, I was told that he wasn't eligible. And it's been sort of touch and go whether he was or was not. And we got clarification probably just before Christmas that he was still eligible for us. I flew over to Greece and had a chat to him. And look, I didn't have to convince him. He convinced me that he wanted to play for the Socceroos, which was great. And look, he's a central striker. He plays in the area of the park where we don't have a lot of depth. And he's done really well in the tough league. The Greek league is a very defensive league. And, he's scored double-digit goals in the last couple of years in great age.
Now, of course, our A-League analyst on the show here on Box to Box, the great man Dean Hennessy, has got a soft spot for Jamie McLaren, who is, of course, on fire this season with Brisbane Roar, I should say. Let's hear what Ange had to say about him.
Hi, Ange. Just wondering, how much more does Jamie McLaren have to do to get into the Socceroos squad?
I had a feeling when I saw the Brisbane Roar. Yeah.
Wants the photo in the background, of course.
To be fair, he must be the only Brisbane supporter that wants me to pick him, because everyone else I know said just leave him with Brisbane at the moment.
Roar, yeah.
And look, he's going well. I know people were talking about his hat-trick last night. I actually selected the squad prior to last weekend, which he knew about, so he's scored 5 goals since I haven't selected him. Look, he's going well. My thinking around Jamie, and I think, Cozzy, you might appreciate this, as a striker, when you come into the international setup, it's really important that you need to stay in there. I don't want to bring him up and just try him, because what happens is as soon as you represent your country as a striker, the clock starts ticking as to when you get that first goal. And with Jamie, and I heard your comments before, Ned, that he's taken his game to another level, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that consistency. If he can have a big final series, when the games are big, and the opposition know now he's the danger man, right? He's not sneaking under anyone's guard. They'll get him ready for what international football is all about. And that's what I want from him. He'll get an opportunity. There's no doubt about it. But just for this camp here, I just felt, you know, if we can keep him motivated, keep him hungry, keep challenging him as a young man, that the idea is we get him in there and we keep him in there at the right time. And I kind of, that's the plan behind it. Having said that, he's done nothing wrong.
By the way, Rob didn't set that up overly well.
No.
It was, of course, on Fox Sports on, I think, a shootout. They had fans asking the questions,
yeah,
and it was a Brisbane Roar fan that asked that question. But, mate, 5 goals in the last 2 games. Mm. As Ange said, he picked the team before those 5 goals.
Yeah.
I reckon we'll see him in those games against Greece back in Australia in June, and obviously that big friendly against England in Sunderland.
Yeah, but credit to McLaren. The young guys, their ego gets pricked. They don't get picked. They could go one way or the other in their immediate response.
And he's gone
just come out and gone bang, crash, wallop, hat-trick.
Fantastic. FFA Chief Executive David Gellip says the governing body is unashamedly set to reward those state governments prepared to offer big money to host Socceroos fixtures, saying New South Wales is far ahead of the rest of the nation. Reports Sebastian Hassett in the Sydney Morning Herald. Don't want to go into this too much, Rob, because we're going to chat to Michael Edgley just after the break about this. But FFA announced on Wednesday will host 5 Socceroos matches and 6 Matildas matches in the next 5 years in Sydney after striking a deal with New South Wales. It's expected that Sydney will get the pick of each year's fixtures unless other state governments begin to stump up the kind of funds that Destination New South Wales has been ploughing into marquee fixtures, mostly involving overseas club teams in recent years. More on this, as I said, in the second hour. More on this with Michael Edgley soon.
Absolutely. Yes. We will be talking to Edge very shortly about all this, and I know he's got some pretty strong opinions on the subject as we've been discussing.
As do I.
We all clearly do. There's the fan in us that says we want the game shared around Australia, but there's the economic reality of the situation, and the truth of the matter is that beggars can't be choosers. The AFL and the NRL have got the big billion-dollar deals, and the FFA just haven't been able to come up with that kind of cash right now.
So they need to get paid, Rob.
Yep, they've got to get the money.
Heading overseas, Antonio Conte will step down as Italy head coach after Euro 2016, increasing British media speculation that he will join Premier League club Chelsea next season. The 46-year-old former Juve coach is contracted to Italy until the end of Euros, of course, this year in France. To quote him, at the moment, our maximum concentration only goes to Euro 2016, during which we'll try to work with sacrifice and make the best of our potential, Conte said this week. After that, I feel I must go back at being a club coach and have the opportunity of coaching every day. Italian Football Federation President Carlo Tavecchio confirmed that Conte will not renew his contract at the end of Euro. Where there's smoke, there's fire, Rob, and I reckon this is a ladder misère.
Oh, absolutely, and the Italians weren't particularly happy with the way that that Chelsea managed the release of the information as well. But when Roman wants, Roman gets. He's paid the big bucks. He's got his man.
He has. Australia's vital World Cup qualifier against Jordan appears to have become all the more difficult. Maybe not. Mm. After English coach Harry Redknapp confirmed his intentions to mentor the side against the Socceroos as early as not this week coming, but the week after in Sydney. The former Tottenham, West Ham and QPR coach will sit opposite Ange Postecoglou in the dugout in Sydney on May 29 as part of Jordan's ambitions to leapfrog the Socceroos into top spot in the group. Jordan sit just 2 points, Rob, behind Australia on the table at the head of their PF, of their FA, I should say, Prince Ali bin Hussein. invited the former 2010 FA Cup winning coach to guide the side for the final two games of the group stage. And I know that Ange had a bit of a bar back to him this week, saying he's known as a bit of a wheeler and dealer, Ari, isn't he?
Well, but he's got two jobs rolling now, doesn't he?
That's right, he's with Derby County, that's right. He's got some sort of technical director role there. But he's traditionally a bloke that can come in and move the pieces on the chessboard. But, mate, when you're coaching Jordan, you can only pick Jordanian players, last time I checked. So good luck with that, Ari.
Hey, but listen, let's not laugh too loudly. We have been burnt by lesser sides than Jordan in the past, and if we underestimate them, we will do so at our own peril.
We will. Now, Harry Kuehl, Alana Kennedy, Matt Ryan, Alex Bryce, and Ellie Carpenter, among the 20 former pupils of Westfield Sports High who have gone on to play senior international football for the Green and Gold. If FFA is successful in implementing the first high-performance school program, many more will pass through the Fairfield School's doors. Fairfield, of course, in Western Sydney there.
Around the corner from my old school, Fairfield
old stomping
Patrician
ground.
Brothers. In the West, I remember when Westfield Sports High first started, and we all wondered what it was about, and look what they've kicked on to.
It's funny, because being a Victorian boy, we don't really have these schools. We now do, Maribyrnong Sports Academy.
The Box Hill Tennis School.
Yeah, so we see these. And the funny thing is, I always assumed Westfield, as in Frank Lowy, was behind this.
But got the idea from them.
Yeah, not necessarily the case. Anyway, so they're piloting a program. Some of the best young footballers in New South Wales will be given access to up to 14 hours of elite coaching, which isn't a lot, really. Experience administered by FFA and what is a test for what could become a national program. I can only assume this is good news, Rob.
It's got to be. I've been saying to anyone who'd cared to listen to it for years now that if you've got a child who's not an academic, who's into sport, and you can direct them in an appropriate style to a career in sport, they don't have to win a gold medal. They don't have to win a premiership with whatever team that they're playing for. If their career is destined to be in sport, guide them through and then teach them along the way. Give them the skills and the learnings that they need to play the career of sport, and then also teach them what they need to do to develop a career afterwards in coaching, in physio, in something that's related to sport, that's something that's related to their passion. So, good news all around as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
Well, let's wrap it up.
Sorry,
here,
mate.
Because we do want to talk to Edge. I want to keep some of your gold till stoppage time. Okay, I hear that Nigel's been trying to ring Goose. I'm not sure whether he's been able to get through to him, but he's going to keep trying. And if we can get the great man on the line, because we really cut him short last week. We didn't do our best effort when it came to getting the great man on. So, look, that is second edition football news with Mark Van Aken. After the break, we're talking to the junket man himself, Michael Edgley, from Hong Kong.
Box to box.
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box. You're with Rob Gilbert, and this week Mark Van Aken. And this week also, the FFA dropped a press release that pretty much made Sydney the Socceroos home for the next 6 years. And today, the SBS inked a deal with Optus, revealing the telco's first step in the EPL rollout for 2016-17 onwards as they go about making a profit on their annual $63 million rights investment. Our very own Box to Boxers, Michael Edgley, is an expert on these affairs through his Green and Gold Army business. So we thought, why go any further than our own backyard to get the man's own views on the subject? But he's not in our own backyard today. He's on his latest holiday in Hong Kong. Edge, how are you going there, mate?
I'm going well, Rob. And you keep saying I'm on holiday. I just am fortunate enough to do some business that takes me away from Australia from time to time. And,
yeah, right.
And I was taking some time out from my busy schedule to have a talk to you about some pretty big news during the week. I tell you, why don't we start with the Socceroos announcement and the matches that are going to New South Wales. It's rumoured.
So did the other states drop the ball, or did New South Wales just slip in through the gap?
I think there's been an issue with the Victorian Major Events Company, which is handling negotiations on behalf of the state government of Victoria. I think there is an issue between the Victorians and the FFA, or some difficulties. But New South Wales, congratulations to them. $7 million, it's rumoured, that they've paid to secure those 11 matches. Six with the Matildas and five with the Socceroos. And obviously, what's interesting for the other states is that New South Wales will get the pick of the bunch. They'll get the pick of the matches in terms of World Cup qualifiers. And don't forget, we have some pretty big matches in the second phase of qualification through 2017.
So to be clear here, Edge, you're saying that New South Wales have got first dibs on all of the games?
Well, you wouldn't if you were in the hot seat at Destination New South Wales on behalf of the New South Wales government. You wouldn't do that deal unless you had the opportunity to handpick the best games. And and you know, and good luck to them. It's a good result for the FFA. It puts a premium associated with the Socceroos matches, which I don't think they've been able to reach in years gone by. But congratulations to them. I think it's good for football. And really, when you take out the AFC Asian Cup match that the Socceroos played in Melbourne, the matches they played in Melbourne, when you take those matches out of the equation, the last time the Socceroos graced the turf in Melbourne was in 2013, so it's been almost 3 years, and there's no sign of them going back, you know, for what I call a meaningful game. I know there is the second match in the two matches that Greece are coming to play, the friendlies, but a meaningful game for the Socceroos in Melbourne hasn't happened for a long time, and there's probably none on the horizon anytime soon. And obviously, the FFA is poised head to head with the International Champions Cup matches, where Melbourne, where Victorian government spends all its money to bring those big branded European clubs for those, what you'd have to say, are highly priced friendly games. It creates a little bit of interest. Here in the local markets, but you know, I don't think the I don't think the fans of those of the Chelseas and Romas are really terribly interested in what goes on over here in the International Champions Cup.
Michael, you are well connected. You've worked many deals with VMEX and Queensland Tourism, etc., etc. What I'm hearing from your tone of your voice and also an off-air conversation we had today is that you think that this is folly from VMEX, that they have not put in the requisite bid for the Socceroos.
For the uninitiated, please explain VMEC.
VMEC, the Victorian Major Events Corporation, who of course are the Australia, well, were once, and many would argue still are, the leading major events acquirer, I guess, in Australia. And you know, I can't agree with you because, yes, we'd love to have Socceroos games in Melbourne, but we've got Juventus coming out to Melbourne in May. We've got Atletico Madrid, who, of course, are a lesser draw card, and as are Tottenham Hotspur. But, you know, don't tell me there's going to be more people or less people heading interstate to watch Juve, given that I reckon one in two Italian-Australians, barrack for the old lady, versus a Socceroos, albeit important World Cup qualifier, against a Japan or a, whoever it might be, a South Korea, North Korea.
Are you starting to sniff a Euro snob here in this studio?
Oh, he's definitely a Euro snob. But look, I think a couple of points there, Mark. It depends on how you value that. What's interesting is that the New South Wales government has suggested that their $7 million will return them $20 million in tourism revenue. Any sort of chartered accountancy firm can come up with a set of numbers that probably make sense for a political apparatus to make a decision on these types of investments. Look, I think if you look at the cold, you know, the Socceroos are the most exciting brand for football in Australia. They are bigger, they are more important and bigger than any club brand. There's no question about that. When I'm talking about the, you know, the sharp end of the qualification matches, for those not to be in Melbourne, which historically, you know, going back 15, 20 years, were always in Melbourne, where they got the biggest gates and also the most travelling participants. You know, as you know, Mark, VMEX interested in getting bums on seats, getting the planes full, hotels full, those types of things.
Yeah, bums on plane seats, really, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, the Socceroos do that for meaningful games. We've not had a meaningful game in Victoria in a long time.
But Ed, you have to say that Sydney's taken over that mantle. I mean, if you go right back to the Euro qualifier and the Asian
type of deal, and I think, sorry, Rob, to interrupt, I think $7 million, that's what's rumoured Destination New South Wales has paid, and I'd say that's for first dibs on the meaningful matches in the World Cup qualification programs for the Socceroos and six matches for the Matildas. I tell you what, I think that's a good deal, and well done to Destination New South Wales. And I think Victoria's been trumped. And as Mark alluded to earlier, you know, that doesn't happen very often, but on this occasion it has. And you know, I'd be interested to know what Victoria will do with any Socceroos matches going forward. Beyond, you know, there was a lot of internal political pressure from the Greek community in Melbourne about the Greece game, but my information is they didn't want to do it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. But congratulations to New South Wales. Rob, Mark and I will be, I mean, although our program's national, we live in Melbourne and we'll be jump in on the plane to see the soccer.
Absolutely. I think all round it's great news for football. It's you've got the two biggest state governments in the country bidding head-to-head against each other. The money's going into the coffers generally of football people, and we're going to see big events and lots of money spent from state governments on football games. So the Sydney people will go to Melbourne, the Melbourne people will go to Sydney, and the people of Adelaide, Perth, Hobart, Tasmania, of course, that's where Hobart is, we'll visit the other state.
The capital.
So, exactly, precisely. So, Edge, look, that's the Socceroos. We also wanted to talk about this announcement today, Australian time, of Optus SBS and the EPL rights. This is a growing story that's only going to have additional layers added to it, but you can't possibly imagine that under any set of circumstances that the Premier League fan in Australia is going to have as good a service next season as they currently do. Do you disagree with that?
Yeah, I do. I actually think it's a really good deal for both Optus and SBS. And, there were certain people in the media sort of signalling the death knell for SBS and football. Mm. But this deal, it's an interesting one. I think, first of all, let's talk about what's in it for the fans. Mm. First of all, there's going to be a Premier League match on free-to-air each round of the season through the next three seasons. That's a bonus for football fans because, as we know, Foxtel penetration is only about 35% of households. So that is a really good result for football fans and to help grow the popularity of
for football game. Fans that clearly don't like football enough to spend $50 a month to actually see about 50 live games a week.
Well, I think there's a bit of paranoia and probably a little bit of shooting from the hip going around by football fans at the moment. If you live in England, you'll have a BT British Telecom subscription to get some of your Premier mm-hmm. League football, and you'll have a Sky subscription to get the others. So that's yep. what's going to happen in Australia. If you're an AFL fan, you'll have your Foxtel subscription, and if you're a football fan, you'll have your Optus Fetch TV subscription. I think it's good news for two reasons, and I'll tell you why. 24/7 channel for football fans is interesting, and I think Optus
which Foxtel already have about 3.5 of. Yep, keep going.
Yeah, but why should Foxtel have the monopoly on football content? I think that's folly. I think this is awesome news for the A-League because Fetch TV and Optus have to be a bidder now for A-League rights going forward. I think that is really interesting.
I can see that,
and
Mark.
Foxtel
monetarily. Is a good point.
Mate, I tell you what, put the A-League on Fetch TV and watch the league just nosedive.
Well, I think you're actually...
keeping in mind, Mike is one of the five people in Australia that has Fetch TV, I'm pretty sure, because he was the one bloke, I've got to say, he held on to his Optus TV long after they lost rights to anything. He held on to it forever and ever. He eventually got over to Foxtel, Mike. But
I'm so happy that these conversations are recorded because we will revisit that in the future when Mark gets rid of his Foxtel and just has Optus Fetch TV. But look, let's just go through the debits and credits of this transaction. SBS is going to pick up one Premier League match per round. They'll also get a whole heap of content they can leverage through their various platforms, including their award-winning World Game website. They retain 25 matches for the Football World Cup in 2018, which includes around...
So flip side is we lose almost half of the World Cup games off free-to-air TV. I'm going to talk over you. We're losing half the free-to-air games on the Logie Award-winning SBS. SBS gets a payday once every 4 years from the World Cup, and that's out the window.
No, what they've done, though, Mark, is there's... I mean, SBS will look at this commercially as well as what's best for its coverage. They've been able to stretch out now what's going to be an interesting advertising piece of content, which is a Premier League match every round. They'll be able to stretch their advertisers to get a better yield associated with that. And you would expect a better football coverage because the content that we have access to will be more significant. And I think, don't forget all of the highlights packages that they're going to secure through this. And on the other side of the fence, Fetch TV and Optus, they've picked up, Confederations Cup, FIFA World Cup and the FIFA Women's World Cup to help spread their football content. And I reckon, this is only me speaking as a pundit, mm-hmm. but I think Optus and Fetch TV are lining up for A-League as well. If they add that to their weaponry, wow, they've got a piece of football content that that is going to be very compelling for the market.
Okay, I'm sold. I'm ringing up Foxtel tonight and I'm cancelling. Come on, Edge. Your evangelist remarks are well and truly locked in stone. Nigel, our producer here, has isolated everything you've said, and we're going to just confirm at some point down the track who was right and who was wrong. Now, mate, we've got to wrap it up because we've got Benny Soro Perez coming up after the break, and there is some breaking news from Nigel, our producer as well, telling us that even though we cut him short last week, that that the great man Huss is coming back on. So is there anything that you wanted to ask him for that stoppage time segment?
No, Huss will probably go on about his babushka dolls again, and he'll probably go on about his time in St. Petersburg. And
it'll be hilarious though, Michael. It'll be hilarious.
It will be hilarious.
Because he's a funny guy.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to listening to it. Hey, fairly big news on the commercial side of football this week.
Mm-hmm.
Well done to the FFA and the New South Wales government, and well done to Optus and SBS creating competition for commercial rights in our sports. A good thing for the sport. Well done to those guys. And I hope you are enjoying Melbourne, and I'll be back with you in the studio next week. I'm looking forward to that.
Garçon, another... What Mai Tai is it that he's drinking in Hong Kong? He's just sort of I'm imagining Edge now that he knows he's
in Singapore up. They have the sling. I'm not sure what they have in Hong Kong, but anyway.
Yeah, whatever it is, he's about to order another one. Michael Edgley, we will see you back next week in the studio for the next exciting edition of Box to Box. See you, mate.
Cheers, guys. Have a good night.
Benny Soro Perez up next with Everything in Europe.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken, and you can listen to us on TuneIn Radio, on digital radio. You can find us on any app you like. You'll be able to listen to Box worldwide. And what we will do is be buying some WD-40 for these squeaky chairs next week, won't we, Mark?
We will. But can you get those at Chemist Warehouse? Probably not.
I think you can.
I should say.
Nice line. Now, Benny Soro Perez, the Brighton and Hove Albion man, he is absolutely cock-a-hoop. He is fizzing at the bung because not only are Brighton and Hove Albion...
Fizzing at the bung?
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Brighton fizzing at the bung over there, were you?
I'm not entirely sure what that is, but I'm going to try.
From my understanding, it was a barrel and the bung was the hole that kept the beer in, and when it starts to fizz at the bung, that's what happens. And that's what you're doing, because Brighton are not only in the promotion spots in the championship, but they are in second place. What's happening here, mate? Are we going to be talking about them in the Premier League next year? Are they the Leicester of the 2015-16 season?
Possibly. I don't want to jump on them and say yes. They're going to go up automatically. It's all well and good. I think, obviously, it's great that they are where they are, but I'm not prepared to write Middlesbrough off yet. I know they've had some issues.
How negative is
this bloke? You're kidding. You won't give Leicester any props up in the Premier League. Your own bloody club is about to get in the EPL, mate. Get excited.
You can't overstate these things. You just roll with it. And you keep bagging me about Leicester, but I've looked at the final eight games of the season, and I think Spurs have sacked Europe off at the hands of losing to Dortmund. I think Spurs are going to get it.
There you go. He's right. He's been predicting it all season.
If Leicester wins the title, Benny, I'm going to hunt you down. Where do you live, Hawthorn? Where do you live?
Somewhere.
I'm going to find you.
Somewhere.
And I'm just going to light fireworks in your underpants, mate. Come on.
All right. Now, listen, you're on your word, Ben. We need one of your Brighton and Hove Albion insider people to be on the program in the next 2 weeks, right? We need somebody who knows what they're talking about over there to give us a bit of the excitement. But there's plenty of excitement going on throughout the FA Cup, the Champions League, the Premier League. Roll us into it, brother.
Oh, yeah, well, obviously this week, big news, usual news, expected news, whatever it was. Arsenal crashed out the Champions League. That's a shame. Same stage they've managed it for, I think, the last 4 years now. What more can you say about
them? They try really hard, though, Ben.
Do try really hard, but it's all in good trying really hard.
They work really hard, mate.
Yeah,
so I mean,
washing
machines,
in time, I was watching a documentary about this in time, the four falls of Buffalo, about the Bills getting to four Super Bowls, losing all of them. For the next 10 years or whatever, they were bashed from pillar to post, useless, losers, blah, blah, blah. And now, I think something like 10 of their starters that those four games are in the Hall of Fame, and they actually get the respect because no one else has done that. So I think, people do bash Arsenal, but look at United. I mean, Van Gaal's come in, $260 million. They can't get in the top four. Wenger hasn't spent anywhere near that in 3 years. And he does it every season. So I feel a little bit sorry for them. But I think at the same time, Luis Enrique, Barcelona, they're a different class, I think, at the minute. I think the game in the week showed that. Obviously, the front three, you know, they don't need any talking up, I guess, is the way to look at that. But they just seemed to switch it on. I thought Arsenal started brightly. Didn't happen for them. Came undone. Similarly, Juve flew out of the blocks, couldn't get it done against Bayern. So it's a strange way that, you know, it's not strange, the Champions League, but it really does expose, if you don't have anything beyond a strong starting 11, which I think is Arsenal's problem, and also Juventus' problem, it really shows when the other teams bring quality off the bench. And I think that's where they came unstuck in the week.
Well, we've listened to a few of Mark's grabs throughout the course of this evening, and Arsenal isn't giving the Premier League title hopes away altogether. Starting this weekend against Everton, who had a great win themselves in the FA Cup over the weekend against Chelsea, can they start to pick some of that momentum up now that they're out of the Champions League? Is there hope? Do you think there is any chance, or
I think
not?
Yeah, I think there has to be. I think if you're an Arsenal fan and they don't pick up steam now as the season rolls on, you have to question more than just Wenger. I think it comes down to the players that you've got and the attitude that they have, be that, you know, overpaid or whatever. Their heart's not really in it because they're not going to win anything. I don't really know. There was a story in the week about fans stopping Mesut Ozil's car in London somewhere, asking him not to leave in the summer. So I think that tells you everything where it is. If they're not confident that their best players are going to stay, I don't think they can be that confident that they're going to push for the title. But still, you'd expect them to do it. I think ultimately, if they fall short, I wouldn't be surprised if Wenger walks away in the summer.
Okay. All right. So you're predicting Arsenal to beat Everton this weekend. What about this one? West Ham, Chelsea. West Ham on the brink of a top four position and definitely playing in Europe. Manchester City are stumbling in front of their eyes. They've got 2 points between them and they play Chelsea this weekend. Do they win this one?
West Ham, yep. I'm in the West Ham camp. I think they're brilliant under Bilic. I watched the FA Cup game with United the other day. United were fortunate to force a replay. I think in Payet, Lanzini, they've just got playmakers that can undo anyone. And I don't know what's going on at Chelsea, but without John Terry, I don't know if there any of their back four would get into any other starting 11 in the Premiership. They look awful. Gary Cahill's been turned around. I mean, Lukaku's goal in the FA Cup for Everton. He turns one way, turns the other, and then he turns back. He's not got a clue.
How must they be ruined getting rid of him?
Yeah, that was a strange one, wasn't it? I think if they want to get him back, they're going to have to pay an astronomical amount of money.
But we'll ask all these questions to Gus in stoppage time. So that's West Ham to beat Chelsea. Right, now the other big one, the massive one, Leicester, Crystal Palace. Leicester just managed to get the result on the weekend against Newcastle. Newcastle under their new coach, Rafa Benitez, showed a little more steel, but they just couldn't get the points. I was on the verge of actually calling William Hill, having a little wager on Newcastle on that age-old theory that the teams that sack their coaches come out and win next week, but I wasn't courageous enough, and I'm glad I didn't. Oh, you did?
I did. I got them at
6-1.
I'm
glad you lost your money and I didn't.
I thought Benitez coming in, two times La Liga winner, Champions League, you know, he's going to spur them on.
He had another reason to want Leicester to
please
lose.
Please gamble responsibly.
Of course, but not only does he think they lose, he's backing them to lose.
The thing is, this has happened in football this month. I know, again, we don't want to talk about other sports because we're a football program, but I know in Aussie rules, it's odds on. Coach gets sacked. New coach comes in. AFL team wins. NRL, not quite as much, but close. Does it happen in football as much? I don't think it does.
It's not. You normally get an upturn in performance. It doesn't always translate into a result. Yeah. I think if you're a Newcastle fan, that's what you cling to at the minute.
Or was it Leicester? Are they starting to bottle it? I'm going to play devil's advocate for you, mate, because I've argued that because they are Leicester, because they're not Liverpool, hence a couple of years ago, that they're not going to get, they're obviously going to get nervous, but they're not going to get as nervous heading in because there's no expectation on the club. But was this, so the question for you, Benny, was this Rafa getting Newcastle playing better, or was this Leicester starting to, you know, just tighten a little bit?
I want to say both.
Yes.
I think it was more Rafa getting more out of Newcastle, but I think Leicester the end of the season's not kind to them. They've got Palace, they've got Southampton and Sunderland. You'd expect them to take points from those ones. Maybe not Southampton necessarily, but it is at home. Then they've got West Ham. You'd pick the Hammers at the minute, I think, on form, the way they're playing. Then they got Swansea, fair enough. Last three games, away to United, at home to Everton, away to Chelsea. If, you know, Spurs are out of the Europa League effectively. Well, they are. So with that consideration, I think Pochettino is just going to go for it. And I think Spurs have an easier run in over the final four or five games of the season with a greater quality and depth.
You know, this is being recorded and it will be played back to you, Ben. This is a big round. Okay, so we do need to skip through a few others because we're just running out of time, as we always do, and we don't get to spend as much time on some of the other games that we want to. So there's games like Watford, Stoke, West Brom, Norwich, Swansea, Aston Villa. They're the rest of the games on Saturday. Apologies to fans of those sides. We're going to skip into Sunday because there is the massive relegation derby between Newcastle and Sunderland. How big is that game going to be?
Massive.
There's the Manchester derby as well, and then there's Tottenham needing to win against Bournemouth, not to ignore completely Liverpool away to Southampton.
Yeah, very much so. But I think you've touched on it. Two big games: Manchester derby and Tyne Wear derby.
Mm-hmm.
For me, if Newcastle were away, I'd pick Sunderland. But I think at home, Benitez is going to get the support of the fans. Mm. I think the players will appreciate that for a change, rather than just being smashed because McLaren didn't know what he was doing. I think they'll do. I think they'll get. They'll get past that at home.
The Manchester derby. Mm-hmm. A lot of sheen's gone off this, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago...
Last chance Corral, I guess, for Man City.
But there's a spot in Europe still. That's the battle. That neither of them are going to win the title, but that there is a spot in Europe at stake here.
Yeah, there is. I mean, if West Ham win on Saturday, their place in the top five... The gap between them and United, I think, goes to 5 points. Mm. So it's almost a must-win for United at this point.
Mm.
I don't think... You know, I know it's a big game and they may get up for it, but I think, you know, you look at it, it's at home for City. Mm. They've got Aguero. They've got quality in every position.
Mm.
United don't.
Well, if the results go against them, if City beat United, if West Ham win, and if Southampton somehow beat Liverpool... Then Southampton then join United on points. Surely Louis van Gaal is given his marching orders if that scenario eventuates.
You'd think so, but I think
surely
a lot of people would have thought it would have come
already. They're that close at the end of the season now. Surely, yeah. Rain, hail or shine, they're going to stick with the horny man.
Yeah, I think Ed Woodward set his stall out. He's sticking by him. I think the summer they'll get rid of him. I don't think they have much choice, but I think to his credit, Woodward's falling on his sword to an extent here and not sending him packing like he did with Moyes last year.
All right, Benny, we talked some of the other teams in Europe earlier in our conversation this evening with you around the Champions League. We didn't get to the leagues in Europe as we would have liked to have, but we will do that next week. This is a massive weekend in the Premier League. We're really excited to be watching it. At least we're going to be watching it on Foxtel.
And not on Fetch and not on VN and not on iPhones and such.
So you enjoy it all, my friend, and we will have you in next week because between now and then you are going to get on the phones and you're going to talk to some more of your Brighton and Hove Albion insider mates and get one of them on Box to Box.
Yeah, that's what I can do.
You just don't look enthused, does he?
He looks enthusiastic about nothing. Next up, Stoppage Time with Mark Van Aken and Hoss.
That's me.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Mark Van Aken, and this is Stoppage Time. The fourth official has signalled just 6 minutes to go. There is a very, very funny story in the world of Portuguese football. Tell us all about it, brother.
Porto president Jorge Pinto da Costa has moved to distance himself from the report that he labelled Iker Casillas' signing a complete fiasco. However, this all gets a bit weird, Rob, as the businessman who supposedly leaked the story has in fact been dead since 2009.
That's a problem.
We can't make this stuff up. He also knew Casillas and the club actually want to trigger an extension on the former Real Madrid man's contract. Well,
maybe he left that remark in his will to be announced around this time. He speaks from the dead.
scantily believable, but anyway, in the world of football, who knows? Of course, Harry, no, I've already done that story. Give me 1 second. He may be in the prime of his career, but Juventus star Sami Khedira has revealed he's in deep thought about his future, and a stint in the A-League is on the radar. Mm. Khedira has kept close tabs on Thomas Broich, who swapped the fishbowl of the German Bundesliga for the anonymity of the A-League. Well, not in Brisbane anyway, or Australia, but anyway, in 2010, Broich, who was a Germany under 21 international when Khedira was with the under 17s, has relished being away from the spotlight and become a Brisbane Roar superstar, as we well and truly know. Also won championships for fun up there in the Sunshine State. Khedira is contracted with Juve until 2019 and made it clear that he still has unfinished business in Europe, but likened the A-League trajectory to America's MLS. He said, and for sure, American football has improved, Australian football has improved, so why not? And me being the glass half full guy.
Yep, as opposed to
why not? Because we're not going to pay you enough.
Exactly.
Yeah, opposed to Benny, who's just sunshines and lollipops over there.
He's half glass empty, and
he didn't like when I said I was going to light fireworks in his pants either.
Precisely. Anyway. And to finish my point.
They weren't going to be flares though, Rob.
Would you stop interrupting?
I'm interrupting.
Thank you. I was going to say, he's not only half glass empty, but he thinks somebody's poisoned the half glass. And because you've been interrupting so much, you're sacked for the rest of stoppage time. Thank you for joining us tonight, Mark. It's been great to have
you on.
You are gone, mate. Because
just for interrupting you.
I know. Well, listen, it's a harsh environment in this studio. And,
it's a tough
game,
the media game.
You've been given your third yellow card, mate, Graham Pohl style. And we did promise, however, because I know Nigel's been working on this all week, we didn't do him justice last week. We only had him on for a minute or two, and Nigel's got him up on the line now. Have you, mate? The great Horst Hiddink, current coach of Chelsea, former Socceroo, South Korea, Russia coach. Horst, great to have you back on the show, and apologies for the way we treated you last week. It really was a little disrespectful.
Well, of course, because I'm Horst, and I'm the best coach maybe in the world, so to only have me for... what was it, 3 minutes, 2 minutes on the program? It was very upsetting. Anyway, we move on.
We'll double that
time. I forgive you, Rob.
Thank you, Horst. You're a great friend of the program. You've been one of the real
box
founding...
box to box.
Box to box.
That's the way I like my player, to play from one box to the other. Of course. Why are you laughing? Talk. What are you saying, man? I come all the way back to Australia. You got no questions? Chelsea. Ask
PSG.
Me about Chelsea.
No, what I'm concerned about was
when
PSG.
I come here, they say we're going to get relegated. Now, you know, we're going nice. We're going to win the FA Cup. I think we're still going. Is that right?
No, you know, you lost against Everton on the weekend. So that's
yeah,
not good.
Yeah, I had my assistant coach at that game.
Yes, and you're also.
I got my finger, how you say in English, on the pulse.
Precisely. Yeah. Well, that's the point that I wanted to make to you, really. I wanted to ask some of the hard questions tonight, because not only are you not paying attention to your own team's efforts, you're out of the FA Cup, you're also out of the Champions League. So, Hus, is the excitement starting to fade with your efforts? Is Roman Abramovich still happy with you as his interim coach?
Well, to be honest, Rob, either way, I get paid. So if you win, I get paid. If I lose, we get paid. I get paid. And, it's okay. Like they say sometimes at Trafalgar Square, sometimes you're the statue, sometimes you're the pigeon. Yeah, so from week to week it changes. But, I'm quite happy, of course.
You can't just brush these things off saying you're getting paid.
I can do what I like, to be fair, Rob. I mean, who are you? Seriously. You host this little podcast or whatever it is. But I'm yours. I can do what I like.
But Roman is Roman. What does he say to you when he puts you inside the closed doors? And how do those conversations go? That's the sort of hard stuff we want to know in Box to Box.
Roman is, of course, a big man in Russia. But I have also been a big man in Russia, and I've spoken to Vladimir. And,
Vladimir Putin or Vladimir Smith?
Vladimir. That sounded like Mark's laugh, that one. Anyway, Vladimir Putin, not Vladimir Smith. I don't know who he is, but maybe he works at the Piccadilly Circus. Cha-ching. But anyway, Vladimir Putin is a good friend of mine. So if Roman wants to go, how you say in Australia, the raw prawn, we see what happens.
So you really do go hard back at him if he goes hard at you. You just make subtle remarks to say, hey, you know,
Roman knows some people. I know some people. Anyway. This is getting to a kind of weird, kind of underworld place, so maybe we move on. Yeah.
So, Hus, it appears that Chelsea isn't the home for Hus long term. What's the sort of expectation for the next stage of your great career?
Yeah, what I do for my career is if they give me lots of money, I stay. If they give me less money, I don't stay. So we see. But, I see they want to bring in the Italian coach from the Azzurri. To come and maybe coach the team, that's fine. I go back to you know, somewhere in Spain on the beach. That's fine. I don't have a problem. Either way, Rus comes out on top.
And that is fantastic to hear.
I put my speedos on, Rob. You're trying to wrap the show?
Well, I'm going
to Am I talking over you again? Maybe I get sent off like Van Aken.
Your red card. Rus, that was it. That was Box to Box for another week on NTS News Talk Sport. We'll do it all again next week.
Top sins.